You're listening to the Young China Watchers podcast. My name is Sam Colomby. Young China Watchers is a global community of young professionals. We host talks with experts in our 10 chapters across Asia, Europe, and the United States, discussing the most pressing issues emerging from China today. For this second episode of the Young China Watchers podcast, I visited Kyle A. Jarrus in his office in Oxford University, where he is an associate professor in the political economy of China. I first heard Kyle speak in London about his forthcoming book on spatial development in China, a topic I knew very little about, but which Kyle made surprisingly interesting. So Kyle, first of all, thanks for making the time to speak with Young China Watchers. Let's start with your book, China's Urban Champions, coming out this July 2019. Can you tell us what your research is about?
So it's really looking at some of the politics of development, but through this spatial lens, where there's this metropolitan dilemma between whether or not to focus on the biggest cities and help them, or to do more to rebalance and redistribute. And I try to make an argument for why we see more metropolitan-oriented development strategies gaining ground in some places, whereas in other places there's a greater effort to disperse development across more cities or cities of different sizes, or between urban and rural areas. And I highlight a couple of key factors in the politics of spatial development policy that help account for these differences. So there's this contest that plays out between different levels of government to build up particular places rather than others. There's also a more general trade-off that has been particularly acute in China, which is the question of to what extent to promote economic growth and efficiency, and particularly short-term development achievements, as opposed to the cohesion and longer-term sustainability of development.
So you picked four provinces as case studies. Can you explain to us why you picked those four? Did you start off with that concept, or did you do some research beforehand and decide that these four would be exemplary cases?
The logic behind picking these four cases, those are Hunan, Jiangxi, Shanxi, that is the province with Xi'an as its capital, and Jiangsu province, was to do two things. It was partly to get regional variation, to really capture different parts of China and the distinct development challenges that provinces in different parts of China have faced. The circumstances in development in a relatively wealthy, relatively prosperous coastal province like Jiangsu are quite different from the challenges faced by a deep, interior province like Shanxi. So capturing some of that variation and looking at how these underlying challenges factor into and shape development choices is a piece of this. I knew that I wanted to capture regional variation and as well as regional similarity, but I also was constrained in some of the particular choices of provinces I used based on where I had some previous experience or contacts who could help to some extent open the door for interviews, or where I had some existing insight into what made these places tick and found them interesting.
You're saying you picked certain provinces because they were easier, right? Because you already had contacts there. Can you tell us about how you went about making those contacts? And did you eventually manage to speak to, the cadres that make the decisions?
So the project has a pretty eclectic set of sources. And I think a lot of people who work on the political economy of development in China are forced to rely on whatever interesting and substantial information they can get that bears on their subject. So I was quite Catholic, lowercase c, in trying to make use of a lot of different types of sources and information. I also found many of the deepest, most substantive, most open conversations were not with officials themselves, who for obvious reasons are somewhat guarded in dealing with foreign researchers and probably even with domestic researchers. But we're with people who had a foot in two different worlds and who were able to have some of the perspective as an academic or as an outside observer to share with me, while also having better access and better insight into some of the kinds of policy considerations and political logics that are driving, the making of development policies and urban and regional policies in China. In terms of gaining access and making connections to open the door for some of these interviews, some of it, as always, I think was fortuitous, that there were either existing friendships or contacts that I had who subsequently very generously helped me reach out to others who might be knowledgeable. Part of the approach was just getting in touch as best I could with actors at different local universities, government research institutes, in some cases even within local governments, to see if they might be willing to talk to a curious foreign researcher with I think a genuine set of interests in understanding a part of China's development policy that's not often very well understood from the outside. But of course, you know, gaining these kinds of access is unpredictable. It's uneven. I wasn't able to carry out all the interviews that I wanted to. That can be frustrating, but it's also entirely understandable. And I think that's a situation that researchers are having to grapple with more and more, particularly in a time where all academic research, let alone research that deals with, you know, very contemporary issues of politics or economics, has become more sensitive, or where people for their own best interests just need to be conservative and cautious in dealing with researchers of any type.
Yeah, a little more on that. Were there any specific barriers? Did you find that certain things that you dug into, certain questions that you asked were very, you had to be careful that they would shut down at certain points?
I think it's true in general that domestic interlocutors in China are less comfortable talking, at least on the record, about elite politics. I didn't feel like there were blanket areas that people refused to discuss. It felt less that people closed down on particular topics than that there were some locations where I did research where it was just more or less difficult to contact, any type of interview subject. And I think that's always more related to local circumstances, changing political winds, the personalities of leaders, or whether leaders at a very high level or leaders of organizations like universities or think tanks, and what their general attitude is and their level of risk acceptance in interacting with foreigners. And there's also, of course, the fact that as you build up a relationship with somebody and they have a better sense of what you're attempting to do with your research, as you have a better sense of their constraints and their position, that you're able to have deeper and usually more substantial and more frank discussions.
I wanted to ask you as well, more on the topic of your research proper. Can you give us some insight into how that provincial government and national government and the national committees and the party levels, how those interact to come to a policy within spatial development?
Part of this intergovernmental politics, as I alluded to earlier, relates to conflicts between the interests or the priorities of actors at different levels of the system. I argue that provincial governments tend to have one particular framework through which they view spatial development, putting a lot of emphasis on their biggest metropolitan regions, having particular ideas for how to develop their territories. But these don't always line up very well with Beijing's preferences above or with the preferences of localities below. Conflict is part of the story, but there's also a huge amount of bargaining and cooperation. And China is very much a multi-level policymaking system where major initiatives, where major policies are a process of iteration through different levels of the system with involvement from actors across different bureaucracies and different tiers of government. One thing that became clear is we tend to think about the power of local governments or subnational governments as related to how much autonomy they have from the center. Whether they kind of stand apart from and have more political independence from and autonomy from the center, more resources of their own or not. And it became more and more clear how inadequate this way of looking at things is for thinking about policymaking in the Chinese context, and also for thinking about what it is that makes subnational level governments or leaders of those governments influential and capable of getting big policy initiatives done. What's really important is actually being able to serve as an intermediary and bring together the ingredients from different levels of the system and different bureaucratic parts of the system. And that's really where I see the critical role that provinces play in China's urban and regional development, is as facilitators and intermediaries and connectors more than anything. Whereas a lot of the story seems to take place, at the very local level, where cities and powerful city governments play a major role in land development, play a major role in industry development, or where much of the action seems to happen at the national level, with national level policy frameworks being set, or with major national level policy initiatives getting approved, I found that actually what it takes to make that happen is often, it recedes into the background a bit, but it's the work of the intermediaries who help connect the resources and the notional authority of the central state with the opportunities and activism and on-the-ground knowledge and know-how and capacity of local governments. So it's precisely because of this kind of awkward in-between role, and it's actually the word, awkward, ganga, this is often used to actually characterize the position of provinces in development politics in China.
Is there a noticeable impact of the rotation and evaluation system of Chinese political appointments on the provincial level?
the fact that leaders rotate frequently, and the fact that that is imposed on them from above by Beijing is a key parameter for understanding development policymaking in China. Despite this, I think this ambition of using these kinds of promotion and evaluation techniques to rein in abuses or excesses from the local level, what you see is that the very rapid turnover that is, you know, part of this system and is in fact required to make it work is also precisely what drives the kinds of extravagant short-term economic thinking that often take hold in these places I've looked at. So the efforts, you know, to build up cities as quickly as possible, to quantitatively expand them regardless of the quality of the growth, the efforts to recruit, you know, huge investment projects, sometimes leveraging big public subsidies to do so, as in the case of Xi'an, which was reported as having spent billions of yuan to help lure in major multinationals like Samsung or others. These things ostensibly are probably discouraged by the central party state in its evaluations, but they're also at the same time something that leaders at the local level feel is necessary to quickly make a splash, to quickly achieve the kinds of breakthroughs and tangible legacies that they want to show for their tenure in particular offices. I think at the same time, although a lot of emphasis gets placed on the incentives that are created by the top-down evaluation system in China, there's not always adequate attention to the bottom-up pressures that leaders face. So although I don't doubt that any, you know, leader of a city or a province in China is acutely sensitive to what their superiors in Beijing think, they also can't afford to neglect the concerns and considerations and interests of those within their jurisdictions. And I think scholars studying China, particularly operating in the vein of the sort of tournament model of promotion, sometimes miss the strength of these local pressures and these more endogenous impulses. And they also, you know, have to forge working relationships with bureaucrats who, unlike the top cadres, don't rotate as frequently across different jurisdictions. And to get the most done, it's probably easiest to align their thinking with that of the sort of larger bureaucratic teams they work with and who are really their eyes and ears and arms when they're on the job. And so what I saw many cases of was cases where, you know, provincial party secretaries or other figures often are very eager champions of policies that have really germinated at the subnational level rather than ideas from Beijing.
So are we, as foreign observers, are we focusing too hard on the gospel according to Beijing? Should we pay more attention to the provincial level, for instance, in terms of BRI investment decisions?
I think the answer is complicated because it's both yes and no. I think on the one hand, China scholars have long recognized the crucial role of provinces in China's governance. In a country that's so populous and so big and so complicated, these are intrinsically important units to study, you know, regardless of their precise relationship with the center. But I think one thing that's important to note is that there's really, I think, variation across different realms of politics in China. And it's in this sense that I think that in some ways, in recent years, there's been a tendency to see the rise of powerful cities and local governments in China on the one hand, and in more recent years, particularly since the rise to power of Xi Jinping, to see a resurgent and very powerful national government. And from that vantage point, provinces have faded somewhat into the background and haven't captured the interest or imagination of scholars the way that they perhaps did in the 1990s, when there were still real questions about whether China would be able to cohere as a national unit. But I think that even in this more decentralized context, the role of provinces remains really important, not in spite of, the fact that there is re-centralization and even a tighter interaction between different levels of government and policymaking, but in many ways because of that. And so this is an argument and an idea that a co-author, Yeling Tan, who's a scholar at the University of Oregon, and I are developing in a paper we're currently working on when we look at the Belt and Road, something that seems like the most conspicuous example of renewed central power in China, when we look at it more closely, also reflects a huge amount of both input and implementation influence from provincial level actors and subnational actors more generally. We see that many of the aspects of the Belt and Road Plan, or many of the corridors within the Belt and Road Initiative, such as those in Southeast Asia or Central Asia, have built upon previous frameworks developed at the provincial level. We also see how in the implementation of the Belt and Road, many of these efforts are also things that very directly involve the provinces, which have both a lot of the bureaucratic capacity that's needed to carry out such a big initiative, but which are also home to many of the companies, including many provincial SOEs and others, who are providing investment or carrying out the investment to build new railways or to build overseas factories or ports in conjunction with Belt and Road. So my argument would be that absolutely, that, even in this context, and in some ways because of this context of recentralization, where Beijing has really bitten off more than it can chew, subnational actors like provinces are inheriting de facto a lot of the actual work of designing and implementing these policies. And many of the concrete plans aren't really taking shape at the national level, even when a lot of the political action and a lot of the symbolic power has been re-centralized in Beijing.
Mm. Okay, my final question to you is, what advice would you give to fellow China watchers or to scholars doing field research in China?
On the one hand, I have to be careful and temper my suggestion because I think the landscape is very fluid. And I think that a lot of issues which may not have been highly sensitive have become more sensitive or have become sensitive in unpredictable ways in the last couple of years. So more than ever before, I think field researchers have to keep their eyes open and have to be nimble and have to be considerate of both their own safety, but also very much of the safety of interlocutors. More specifically, and as with anything, I think building strong relationships is really essential to success. Nowhere perhaps more than in a context like doing field work in China, where as foreign researchers, we're always outsiders to the system and will be perceived as such. And the extent to which we're able to learn anything about it and interact with many of the people within the system we're studying really depends on the goodwill and an understanding of our own counterparts and colleagues on the Chinese side. So this is both the most important, but also in some ways the most difficult task that any field researcher in China has to manage. And it's a time when I think many scholars like myself who have been doing work in the Chinese context are forced to rethink the approaches that we've taken and whether the approaches that we've used in our previous projects will remain adequate for a new and more, in many ways, more difficult, but perhaps also more interesting research context.
Kyle Jarrus's book, China's Urban Champions, The Politics of Spatial Development, will be published by Princeton University Press on July 23, 2019. It's available for pre-order on the Princeton University Press website. I'd like to thank Kyle for taking the time to speak with Young China Watchers. For more info on our organization, visit youngchinawatchers.com. Find out where your nearest chapter is and come meet up with us. Thank you for listening. My name is Sam Colomby. The music in this episode is by Blue Dot Sessions.